What is up, BA family, and welcome to another episode of the Breathe and Air podcast, where everyday action meets extraordinary mindset. I'm your host, Mason Bendigo, and thank you all so much for tuning into another episode. Today, we have the owner of Habit Method Health. She's an expert in epigenetics, biohacking, and mobility, Ryan Overcash. I'm super pumped for you guys to hear this episode. And you know, we talk about a lot of things ranging from gut health to biohacking, but focus on epigenetics and the fact that all of our DNA and our genes are a little bit different, and that there isn't really a one-size-fits-all approach to health. So I really enjoyed this opportunity to speak with Ryan and hear her expertise on the situation, and I think that y'all will enjoy it just as much as I did. If you want to hear more from Ryan, you can find her on her Instagram at Habit Method Health or habitmethodhealth.com to see everything that she offers. Today's episode is brought to you by Garden Fresh Media. They're a media company that does social marketing, design, branding, photography, video, web design, and all the content that you need to make your dream company or process come true. In today's day and age, you need content. You need to have an online presence. I think it's now even more evident with COVID and all that's been going on. And Garden Fresh Media has the tools for you to level up your business. Garden Fresh Media, no media, no growth. You can find them at gardenfreshmedia.com for all of your content needs. As always, if you guys haven't already, go follow us on Instagram at Breathe and Air Podcast. I continue to keep good stuff up there for y'all and make sure that your feed is filled with positive affirmations, positive things that are pushing you through your day, positive things that are going to help you level up and become your optimal self mentally, physically, and spiritually. So thank you all so much for tuning in, and enjoy Miss Ryan Overcash. Today we have the owner of the Habit Method Health Company. She is a master of epigenetics, biohacking, and mobility, and has a story of her own that really connects all the pieces to why she should be someone that you look at when you're interested in these topics. Ryan Overcash, thank you for coming on the show.
Hey, Mason. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate the generous intro. I'm really excited chatting with you today.
Yeah, coming all the way from the Hill Country in Texas. I know we have a lot of listeners in the DFW area, so it's always good to talk to a Texan.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I will say, you know, maybe the one positive thing about COVID is that I was able to expand outside of Texas, and my clients now are really nationwide, really spread out all over the country. So one positive thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's so crazy to see. We were already in such a technological world, and now it's even more so just got, you know, pushed to a different level with COVID. And it is right. Connect on a level with people all over the world, really.
It's been great.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about what epigenetics is or nutrigenomics is. Is there a difference between those two?
Well, a little bit. So I would consider nutrigenomics as sort of a subcategory of epigenetics. And epigenetics is how our environment and our lifestyle affects our genetics or our genetic predispositions. So we know that somebody who maybe doesn't have a predisposition for, let's say, lung cancer, but maybe they spend their life around tar or asbestos, they certainly are increasing their risks. And the same vice versa. If we have somebody who doesn't have a genetic predisposition for cancer, but spends their life as a smoker, they certainly are increasing their risks. So we think now that genetics play maybe a 30% role in developing or the outcome of our health. So that means that you have control over the other 70%. And I think that's some really good incentive to do your best to lead the healthiest life you can.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been listening a lot about, you know, I think with all the health fads and, you know, it's becoming a thing that's trendy, you know, certain diets or certain ways of exercising, certain lifestyles that, you know, these health coaches who may or may not be, you know, fit to be giving instruction, right? But it's a trendy thing. So sometimes people fall into this, but I think genetics plays such a big role in that there is no one size fits all approach per se to a lot of overall health and wellness. So tell me a little bit about how you like got into this, because it's interesting. And I think it's going to continue to grow, but tell me a little bit about your story.
Yeah, I hope we have enough time for this. I'll try to give you the short story. So I struggled for, I came from a background of fitness and spinal mobility. I was doing a lot of life coaching, helping people just sort of integrate not only a diet and exercise routine into their life, but I was working with a lot of executives and having to figure out, you know, if I can't get this person in a gym for 60 to 90 minutes a day, how can I improve their life? And so we were really working on making a lot of small changes. But at the same time I was developing this fitness company, my health was plummeting. And I think you'll hear this from a lot of people in wellness, that what brought them into their area or their career is their own personal story. So I basically started to deteriorate very quickly. And I was a young person. I was in my early 20s. There was really no medical reason for me to have some of these symptomatic expressions. And what was really alarming is that doctors were not able to tell me what was going on with me or why. So after about 8 years, I had seen 37 specialists. I'm sure there were more doctors, but those are the ones I kept track of. I had a list of about 54 symptoms, and I'd carry around this big 4-inch, like 3-ring binder. And it had all of my labs, my information, all the tests that had been run. And I'd basically like hand that over to a practitioner every time I'd walk in their office. Because if I wasn't that proactive, doctors sort of just wrote me off. And this is something I hear now with my clients every single time is, my labs look normal, doctors say I'm fine, it's probably in my head, but I feel terrible. I know there's something wrong with me. And that is basically the same speech I was giving. And most of the time, I'd say 90% of the time, doctors would either hand me a pill or a prescription or really tell me, okay, well, let's see, let's check in 6 weeks. And this went on for years. And I would develop symptom after symptom. So it started with kind of things that might've been difficult for me to show my doctor. I was feeling kind of tired and run down. Like I wanted to sleep 15 plus hours a day, still wasn't rested. My appetite was changing. I was losing hair, gaining weight. Eventually I developed tachycardia, so a rapid heartbeat, was hospitalized for kidney problems, heart problems, lung problems, GI problems, and nobody was really connecting the dots on these things and kind of looking at them with a bigger scope. So eventually I was diagnosed with something called dysautonomia, which basically in Western medicine means we don't know what's wrong with you, but your nervous system is going haywire. And I just really was at a breaking point. I knew that if I continued down this track, I was going to get worse. And in fact, one doctor looked at me, I was probably 25 at the time, and he said, we don't know what's wrong with you. If you die, you might die, but if you don't, you're probably not going to make it to 30. Your quality of life is going to tank. And, you know, sorry, just really try to learn to live with it. And I thought, this is crazy. This is just unacceptable. This is, you know, the most advanced country for medicine and accessible medicine. This is so wrong. So my own experience eventually led me to remission. I was able to help put the pieces together. And one of the things that I always say is like my key in the lock moment was a nutrigenomic report. There are lots of consumer, most people know like 23andMe. There's a couple reasons I don't use that one. I'm happy to share why, but for the most part, that was a turning point. I probably carried it around for 3 or 4 years and had a couple of doctors look at it and just brush right past it. They just didn't know what to do with it. So when I finally got to someone who said, hey, did you know this? Did you know this is why you're not getting better? And look at this marker. This is why your regimen is just terrible plan. It really started to make a lot of sense to me. And so when I was started coaching others and sort of helping them integrate the protocol that I used, that was the first thing I said is, how do I get these people a nutrigenomic report? And from there, the habit method was built to really help people think of wellness as a habit. And little baby steps you can do each day that are accessible and doable, and they don't seem like this mounting life-changing event. So that's essentially now when I work with somebody, it's pretty hands-on. I like to share with them the details that led me to remission.
Yeah. It's so crazy the way that, you know, our bodies react to certain things differently than other people. Everything is so unique and innate to us as human beings. And that's why I really don't think the one size fits all approach works. Were you, it sounds like you were technically really living a pretty healthy lifestyle, or am I right in that prior, or was it something where you had these major changes?
You know, both. I'll say both. I totally agree with you too. I think the future of medicine is bio-individualized. I think there is no general or the best, or, you know, it's what's right for you. And I think that's why so many people get frustrated and struggle. Did I make big life-changing changes in my environment, in my diet? Absolutely. Was there necessarily one that was the overall arcing moment? Probably not. I think I was doing what most people are doing now that I meet with, which is, I think I'm doing the right thing because I don't know what I don't know. And for me, I think coming from a background in fitness, there were really, and this was, you know, a decade ago, so the emphasis might've been a little bit different, but certainly my knowledge of micronutrients, say coming from a fitness world, was really different. There was a lot of emphasis in fitness around like low calorie rather than like high nutrient. Mm-hmm. And so I've always been a pretty healthy eater. I think what I ate probably changed pretty significantly when I was sick. But learning how important my gut health is was something that I don't know why, but even through 37 doctors, nobody mentioned to me that dietary changes could essentially improve my gut function, which would then improve my cognition. But, you know, I think one of the biggest things is education. And for me, it took 10 years to kind of piece these things together. But what I really aim to do is give these people a quick hack, give my clients a hack into the things that took me a decade to learn. In hopefully a lot less time with a lot less money spent.
Right. I've seen this actually at a personal level with my mom. She, you know, my whole life growing up was very all about, you know, eating organic food before this was like a popular thing to do. I was in my house. All the guys would be like, where's the soda? Like, where's the Pop-Tarts? Where's all these things? Like, it just wasn't a thing in my house. And looking back now, I'm like, wow, thanks for these, like you said, habits and small things that I've been able to accomplish from those habits that I made at a young age. But she basically had some health issues, and with the antibiotics that she was prescribed, it created a bigger list of issues. And I think
that
over-the-counter medicine sometimes, which I'm not totally disclaiming because I think that at times it's absolutely necessary, but I think you should exhaust all options before you go down that road, because there's so many side effects and things that can really, really throw your whole system into a loop whenever you're putting those harmful antibiotics and over-the-counter pharmaceutical medicine in your body and in your system, gut being specifically one.
Definitely. And, you know, when I tell the more expanded version of my story, I always talk about the part where I was put on a 90-day regimen of antibiotics back to back, two in a row. And I have no clue if that was the right medical treatment. I think there probably were some other options that weren't given to me. And as a young person, I didn't know how to advocate for myself in that instance. But I think, and even simple things, like you mentioned over-the-counter things, I see a lot of issues with people kind of chronically, I don't want to say abusing, because that's probably not the right word, but chronically using even like PPIs, proton pump inhibitors, so things like Nexium, Tums, that really suppress our ability to absorb nutrients. And this becomes this massive downstream issue. So in trying to address what is a minor symptom, let's say reflux, we're creating osteoporosis and hair loss and cognitive dysfunctions. So and most people just don't even put those pieces together because no one told them that. So part of my job is to sort of like examine their whole life, everything that they do on a day to day, and find the things that might be red flags and maybe offer some suggestions or some support if we need to discuss these ideas with their doctor.
Yeah. And you mentioned gut health, and I think this is an extremely important thing because it's our body's second brain. And like you said, there's such a connection between gut health, mental cognition, and all of these other overlying factors that gut health plays a role in our body. But tell me a little bit about, you know, foods, specific foods, even other than, you know, just like supplementing probiotics or prebiotics, but what are some ways that we can eat healthier and give our gut health, you know, that boost that it needs? And what are things to get away from?
Yeah. I mean, so not to jump ahead, but one of the reasons that I started running nutrigenomic testing on people is because they would come to me and say, you know, what are the right foods for me? And I'd say, well, I don't know. And we when I first started doing this, you know, there were a lot of options that that I had used myself that I think sometimes are the right choice, like a SpectraCell, a micronutrient, or NutriVal is the other brand, or some gut function tests, and they're pretty extensive, but they're also pretty expensive, and you have to keep doing them. And so when people were asking me, you know, what does my body really want, and what does it not want? The one beautiful thing about genetics is it only needs to be run once. It's not changing. And it gives me insight into sort of how your body processes things. So it's like our operating system, essentially. So when people come to me, and I have a lot of clients out of like the Austin area, and people are always eating things they think are really healthy. Like, let's use fermented foods as an example. We hear a lot right now about fermented foods, but there are a certain group of people that actually tend to have a bit of a reaction to these foods in the form of kind of like a histamine response. And so there's a couple of genes that I always test for when we have any kind of gut reaction or even chronic allergies. I always look at the HNMT genes. These are really important to understand kind of how your body's going to respond to fermented foods, kombucha, and even spinach is one that can set people off. Of course, the probably most trendy gene right now is the HLA-DQ2 group, and this is the celiac gene. And so there's a lot of talk about understanding more about how gluten responds in our body. The gluten protein, as you know, can negatively affect a lot of people, and it can be responsible for symptoms that aren't even in our GI tract. You know, I have a lot of cases with eczema, cradle cap, even cognitive issues, all can be related to these gluten proteins. And so that really gives me insight. The MCM6 gene is a really common gene for lactose. A lot of people will tell me, I don't have an issue around lactose or dairy products. And then we look, and then they start to say, oh yeah, I guess I do feel kind of crummy after. Like, well, that would have been helpful in the beginning, but you know, here we are. So and then I wanted to tell you this too, before I get lost in my train of thought, but one of the coolest things that I was a part of was a case, a young man who had been diagnosed with basically IBS. So they didn't know what was wrong with him. He was just obviously symptomatic and having some GI issues. And when we ran this panel, we saw this this whole page of homozygous results, so double broken, on these autophagy genes. And we know autophagy to be kind of the trash collectors of our cell. They clean trash out so we can get nutrition in and keep the cell functioning properly. But the one of the newest links to autophagy genes is for Crohn's. And so people who are struggling to really identify and treat things that are a general diagnosis like IBS, tend to really benefit from things like the genetic testing to identify these markers.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting what you're saying as far as our genetics based on things that we maybe were like always taught, this is something good for you, like this is healthy for you, where you sort of talk about fermented foods, like the big thing right now, kombucha or things like that that are trending. And that's why I think it's so important to what you said earlier, as far as like doing your own research, making sure you're like looking in the right places for this health information, and then really being aware of how you feel after you eat certain foods, how you feel.
Yeah, definitely.
Things like be cognizant of the way that certain things make you feel, and don't go and complain that you don't feel good after you ate a double cheeseburger, right?
Yeah.
Or dairy or gluten. Those are two major ones that I think that are on the forefront.
Yeah, one thing I usually tell my clients to do is keep me a food journal. So we'll share like a little note where we can type back and forth, and they'll send me pictures. So, you know, being a little bit vague is sometimes to their benefit, because they'll text me and say, oh, I had a fruit salad or something. And I'm like, well, that doesn't sound bad. And then I see the picture of it. It's like a Dole fruit cup. It's got like 27 grams of sugar. I'm like, oh, this is why your belly hurts, you know? So just giving clues and keeping a log, I think, is really helpful, whether you're working with a practitioner or not. I think is really helpful to sort of identify. And the other thing I was going to say about gut function is around the timing of when we're eating. So we know that like eating super late in the night can disrupt our circadian rhythm and kind of throw off our melatonin production. But also eating, I have a lot of intermittent fasters, biohackers, and when they come to me where they're, you know, not eating after like 4 p.m. and we see this massive drop in their blood sugar. And what's really interesting is that they sometimes can run low in amino acids, and that can disrupt their sleep too. So just identifying the things that really make you feel better. Food should make you feel fueled and not lethargic and exhausted.
Right. Has there been any overlaying like things that you're seeing pop up for a lot of people, or things that you've seen more often than not when running these tests, as far as, hey, this is something that you might need to cut out? You mentioned sugar. I'm assuming that might be one of them, right? Has there been something that you've seen in a majority of your clients where it's like, this might not be something that you should be incorporating in your diet?
I mean, just as far as like a general, well, I mean, there's two trends that I keep seeing a lot right now. One of my practitioner partnerships is in the neuropsych space. So, and she's a psychotherapist, and we work together on a lot of cases around adolescent mood disorders. So I'm essentially running tests to give her some more clues on her clients. And one really interesting thing that it shouldn't be surprising. It just surprises me that other practitioners find this really, really surprising. Is that when there is a neuro issue or a mood issue, there's always a gut issue. I don't like to speak in really blanket terms like that, but so far in my experience, I've never seen that not be the case. There's always an underlying issue with gut function when we're talking about mood. So anytime someone comes to me wanting to know, you know, what diet they should eat to maybe improve their anxiety, depression, OCD, first thing I look at is gut. If there's one food or one ingredient I could say might be safe for all humans to stay away from, I'm not a huge fan of canola oil, but I know y'all are going to come for me. So it's in everything and it's in all of your favorite snacks, but it's very difficult for the body to break down. And, you know, I'm not a clinical nutritionist. And so one of the things I really like to do when people ask me that question is refer them to a clinical nutritionist who can, kind of give them the scoop, with all the details. But I think if we're really talking about avoiding processed foods, there are some foods right now on the market, I'm going to try not to name names, that have very healthy looking labels. They look like fantastic alternatives to what we think of as junk food. But when you flip over the label, it says expeller pressed canola oil. And I think they serve them at Burger King, so don't eat those.
Yeah. The trends are there, and where there is a market to make money, there are going to be people who shouldn't be in this area. And I think that is a shame, but it's also something that we need to be aware of, right? We need to be aware that just because someone packages a good marketing team puts together a quote unquote healthy product, it's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like for the most part, eating today, it's kind of a trick. You know, even when I was in Whole Foods with a client last weekend, and I mean, it's thousands of square feet of food, and we're going through and the first 9 things they pick up, I'm like, nope, 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 can't have that. Don't eat that. Let's pick, we can do better. So it's scary and it's tough. I know it's exhausting for a lot of people. So, kind of, I think one thing that having this nutrigenomic report in front of you is helpful for is just sort of honing in on what you should do or where you should start, maybe eliminating or cutting. Because obviously, if I told everybody they've got to get on the autoimmune protocol diet, they're not going to do it. I mean, most people are going to say, no, that's way too invasive to my life. And I want to be able to eat and have fun. So baby steps.
Right. Sustainability. I think that's a huge part. Definitely. Of sustainability for each person. And that comes back to the, you know, we're all unique. I think that is what genetics shows us as well. In terms of gut health, and then we can move on from this, but if someone's listening and says, man, I may be feeling down or I may be feeling some type of way and I want to know if my gut, you know, is up to par with what it should be, how would they go about doing that? Like what is a step that you would take them in if they came to you and said, hey, my gut's not doing well, I'm not feeling good. How would we go about this process?
Yeah. So I mean, we know that 90% of our serotonin, our happy feel good hormone, is made in our gut. So it makes a lot of sense when people say I'm not feeling great, and my gut is definitely part of the puzzle. First thing I have people do is kind of like what I mentioned, keep a food journal. Let's identify some of the issues that might be a problem or a trigger. And then, I love to do, the testing. And then I think probably my greatest strength, since I'm a non-MD, is matchmaking. I love to send and set people up with practitioners that I've vetted, I trust, I use, that I think are not a waste of time and money. And, so I like to, my clients will joke that I'm a professional harasser. I will get in touch with the expert. I'm not afraid to make a phone call on behalf of my client. And if there's somebody like let's say a functional gut specialist that we need to meet with, I certainly will do my homework and make sure that we get them set up with some further testing. You know, the American diet's really interested for gut function because it's kind of a vicious cycle. And I'm so glad that you like give your mom such credit for identifying some of these healthier foods. But, I feel like it even extends past food. I was on a case earlier this year with a young woman who was about 30. She had had 2 children pretty close back to back almost. She was immediately put on an oral contraceptive right after that. And came to me and said, what do I do? I was just diagnosed with osteopenia and so brittle bones. And I could tell she was just struggling and she was stuck. She said, I eat right and I exercise and I think I'm doing all the right things. And, you know, we started doing some education on where she could be losing these micronutrients. And she was blown away that there was so much information out there and available. She just didn't know what to ask. So, or how to do that research on her own. So, you know, food, certainly important. Education, definitely important. I think that helping somebody identify the areas that they can make changes is probably the best thing a coach could do.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. I was looking on your Instagram earlier and I saw this newbie machine, and this may be like a totally different topic, but I'm...
yeah. We'll switch. That's okay.
Gene is like, what does it do?
So, well, I'm gonna try to try to explain, but it does so many amazing things that I feel like it's really hard to articulate, and I don't know why this is such a hurdle for me, because I have to tell other practitioners and other clients what this is all the time, but I'm going to do my best. So Nubi is my favorite biohacking device. It is an EMS device, so electrical muscular stimulation. It is a little bit unique in that, unlike these TENS units that we saw from the 80s that just forcefully contracted a muscle, this machine uses DC current, and which it uses an alternating DC current. And so rather than just forcefully contract a muscle, it's actually utilizing the nervous system, which, whole nother podcast, I'll come back for that topic. But I think for a lot of people, in understanding that the nervous system is responsible for sort of how we move, how we digest food, and regulates our breathing, it's really important in our wellness. So this is absolutely my favorite device. It's parked right behind me. I don't know if you can see it in the shot, but it kind of goes everywhere that I go now. And interestingly, just to sort of circle back to gut health, one of the neatest things, I didn't really intend when I got this machine to utilize it for this purpose, but I've seen incredible changes in some of my clients who do have these nervous system related gut dysfunctions. So kind of like IBS or hypermobility in their bowel. And that's been really neat to sort of see them use something that is non-invasive and non-pharmaceutical and get relief. I'm going to try to summarize this. I hope that I get this right. But if I don't, please let me come back on and correct myself. The Nubi does kind of three things, three that I'm interested in, maybe more than that. One is it helps increased muscle tone for strength training. So muscle blood flow accelerates the ability for the muscle to recover. So I'm going to try to stick to all the things that are FDA approved, but if you were to Google or like go on Instagram and look at who's using the Nubi, it did get really popular with bodybuilders. I won't say that it's FDA approved for hypertrophy, but bodybuilders are certainly using it for that. It feels kind of like tingly and buzzy when you're doing it, but it is meant to be used while you're moving. So I can essentially, let's say I'm going to pad someone up who has a tight lower back and really has trouble doing basic things like getting out of a chair or like getting off the floor, and it's getting in the way of their mobility. I can put these electric pads on them and ask them to do that movement. And essentially their brain is sort of tricked into thinking that they can. It's blocking pain signals. It's blocking your body from the protective mechanism that keeps you from moving through emotion. So we can throw it on and simulate a very heavy squat with very low weight. Second thing that it does that is incredible is I use it for a lot of rehab. If somebody has an atrophy in their muscles, let's say they wear a cast for a few months and they've got these dysfunctions and one leg is certainly smaller than the other, it's incredible. I have not found anything that beats it. The last thing that it does that I use it for is a protocol they have named the Master Reset. And essentially, it's a parasympathetic nervous system shift. So think assisted meditation. It helps us down-regulate the nervous system and switch out of fight or flight into rest and digest, which is where all our healing happens. So if you're ever in Texas, come try it. If you're in Austin, definitely reach out to the New Fit Clinic. They're fantastic.
Yeah. So if I'm getting hooked up to use it, are they just little pads? Because I'm thinking of back when I played football, like the stem pads, like I would get the little – if you had a quad injury per se, three or four little pads that they would attach and then kind of get your stimulation, your muscle contraction. Is it similar to that or is it something different?
Yeah, the pads look similar. The technology is very different. So I think that's one reason it often gets confused for some of these more antiquated technologies because it looks very similar, but yeah, we should go do an episode at the New Fit Clinic and let you try it out. They have some amazing clinicians there. I think it's so neat. I found them because I was looking for a device for a stroke victim, and I ended up being able to use this on like all of my clients, including stroke, Parkinson's, MS. So it's a game changer. I will say there's one other device that I've been I've been working on getting into my repertoire here. I don't know if I should, I'm sure it's okay to mention it, but I have a code, but I don't know if it's up and running yet. But I've been using a Power Dot, and this got kind of popular. I've heard about it often on like the Ben Greenfield podcast. But it's cool. It's really teeny tiny. It's probably a little more consumer friendly. So if you're just like, you know, a dude at home and you don't want a practitioner grade device, then this is certainly an option. But they're rolling out some really interesting things, and were gracious enough to link up with me and provide an opportunity for me to give it a try.
So is just a smaller version, like more accessible?
Definitely smaller. It fits in my purse. It's probably about this big. And I'm really excited to try it on a flight. The next time I fly, I'm a really terrible flyer, but I feel like if I can be busy and doing something that's distracting me, I'll probably be less of a pain. but yeah, if you have time, sometime we'll go through kind of a couple of these technologies and let you demo.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me. The biohacking world has been something that I've really started to dive into, and it's interesting how it can be something for, you know, muscle activation, hypertrophy, rehab, and then at the same time it could be a device that's used for, like you said, a parasympathetic state, or getting out of your certain state and getting into your recovery state. Like, how would that play? It doesn't make sense to think that it could do both.
You know, I am just going to say, I am not smart enough to explain the science to you. There is, so I'm going to save that for the experts. I'm afraid I would stick my foot in my mouth pretty quickly, but there are some really neat applications. And what's so cool is, you know, I found this device to help someone else and ended up meeting all of these people, not just at New Fit, but at these other companies that had these really great offerings, and they are so helpful and they're so hungry to help people. And I think that's the greatest thing about this little network and this community that I get to be a part of is, you know, in my opinion, biohackers are really excited to help others and to sort of share. And, you know, we know that nutrigenomics is sort of the foundation of all biohacking, right? So understanding our operating system, understanding how to support or suppress areas that might need help, and really optimizing our health in this really unique approach. So I think you definitely should come and visit at New Fit and see a little bit more about the tech.
Yeah, that's actually how I found you in the first place. Jean Valacara had him on the podcast and was following him, and he's huge on biohacking, as you know.
Yeah.
What's something that's, if someone's listening and they have no idea about biohacking, I know the first thing that comes to my mind is cold showers, right? I'm actually reading like the Wim Hof method right now.
Thinking
about the nervous system and breathing and cold shower mindset, that kind of thing. We don't have to go down that road. My question for you is, what's something that is maybe practical that someone at home could use or do that you use in your daily routine or you find really helpful when it comes to the world of biohacking?
You know, one tip I probably give to every single person I work with is to try to breathe through your nose. And there's a lot of studies, like even in Ayurvedic medicine, so in Indian medicine and yoga practices, that nostril breathing or alternate nostril breathing can be really absolute game changers for the nervous system. So that's something we can do anywhere and everywhere. I'm often in the car for extended periods of time, and so I'm sure I look crazy doing it, but I will integrate tactical breathing as often as I can. So inhaling through my nose and really trying to control my exhale. I am not a fan of cold showers. So I think it's great if you can do it. I still have a lot of trouble being comfortable, but nostril breathing, you can do anywhere, anytime. Posture is probably the other thing that I crack the whip on. I think all of us, especially this year, I have noticed my posture too, from being on all of a sudden these Zoom calls and sitting in front of a computer, like getting really curved and rounded. It's really something we we can never have a replacement for our spine, right? It's like the one part of our body we can't ever go get surgery and fix. So I feel like we've really got to take care of our spine and get out of these like horrible postures that are for sure aging us. I think those would be like my top picks. I could probably get off on a tangent about water, but I'll save you.
Very tangible for everyone to use. Posture is huge, especially with thumbs. Everyone's always hunched over looking at it. I have to always, you know, myself from doing the same thing. I think working out your back just easily can fix your posture as well. I know, and when I was a sophomore or junior in high school, I dislocated my shoulder when I went to the PT, you know, to decide, am I going to get surgery here? Like, what's the deal? I had just come off of an ACL surgery. And so I wasn't trying to miss any more, you know, of my competition. And I wanted to be able to stay in it. And the biggest thing that we did for posture and never dislocated my shoulder again is because my posture was bad. My shoulders were rounded. And by just create like helping my posture and, you know, putting an emphasis on my back, that changed dramatically.
Yeah. And I see it, especially in like a lot of young women that are training, you know, one reason that I still always try to integrate spinal mobility when I'm with a client, is I see these women and like right now training like glutes and legs is super cool and trendy. And like everybody wants this really curvy bottom half, but really integrating the entire posterior chain and eliminating these compensations that so many people develop, I think might be the trick to, turning our age back, you know, really reducing how much stress we're putting on our bones and our joints and our muscular structure so that we don't need knee replacements, hip replacements at 60, you know?
Yeah, that's something I'm personally, selfishly interested in because my chances with two knee surgeries go entirely up, right? And by that time, who knows what kind of technology we have, but of course I'm going to do everything now. To be able to not have to have knee surgery. I also work in medical sales, so I watch these surgeries in orthopedic surgeons, and I'm in the room, and I'm like, that's something I never want to have done.
I didn't really mean to carve this little niche out for myself, but I tend to get a lot of people who have had joint replacement surgery, and the issue is not resolved. They still have problems or pain or something like that. So, it's pretty obvious that these compensation patterns are not eliminated just because surgery is added to the recipe. You know, evaluating kind of how somebody moves and why they move that way, I think is pretty important. Do you know this modality called Eldoa?
I haven't heard of it.
I was introduced to it last year. I'll send you some stuff on it. It's really cool. And it's kind of like yoga for your joints. It was developed by a French osteopath and some of the hardest movement I've ever done. So if you're up for a challenge.
I'm always up for a challenge. We actually had an osteopath on from Australia not too long ago, went to college with her and she played rugby and then went back home to Australia and is actually practicing osteopathy now. I think it's one of the cooler sides of medicine that I've seen just because of the incorporation of body, mind, spirit. She's like, it's weird. I'm like doing PT and then I'm like their therapist at the same time. And I just, that whole concept of, I think those three pillars all connect together. I think you can be really healthy. And if you know, you're not lifting correctly, you're not physically active, you may have some deficiencies there. You know, I think that it's important to be able to quiet our mind, to be able to be present, to have that mental aspect of health. You know, health isn't all just physical. It is a big part of it is physicality. And I think, like you said, gut health and, you know, all of the hormones and endorphins that are released when we are physically active. But, you know, if there's too much going on in your head at the end of the day, you can't be right inside. I don't think that any of that matters, how aesthetically pleasing you look or how mile. So I think that all of that ties together. And I think osteopathy is, you know, one of those things that, you know, I'd be a proponent for because it approaches health in that manner.
Yeah, definitely from the preventative side of things.
Yeah. that's a good word. That's something that I think people need to take heed to, is preventative, because it's so easy to get lost in that domino effect of fixing one problem that causes the other.
Across the board. Yeah. Not just in joint replacement and surgeries, but also, you know, nutrition, in our lifestyle, in our pharmaceutical use. So, and you know, I've never lived in another country, so I don't have a lot to compare to, but I do know that, for a long time, I thought I was really frustrated with the options that were given to me. And, I know a lot of people feel this way. Every time I post something on my social media, you know, about my story, I get these hundreds of responses, people saying, that's me, that's my story, I feel that way too. And nobody's offering me an alternative. So I think prevention across the board is probably where our focus should lie, for the next, the future of the turning future of medicine. Whether it's bones or gut health or our mental health, finding a way to not do this patch job that I think Americans are so famous for doing.
Yeah, that's so true. You spoke earlier on 23andMe, because I think that is the, you know, when someone talks about this type of subject, I think that is a known name. So what would be reasons why, like, I know you said you had a few reasons why maybe to go with a different route.
Oh, and they'll say on the website that this is not for medical information. And there's a couple reasons that they make that disclaimer. If you are interested, go down that rabbit hole. But you know, there's a lot of liability when you're offering information, and I think they're just trying to be extra careful and make it clear to people. So number one, it's very difficult to download that raw data and interpret it, or upload it into a third-party system to interpret it for medical use. Sure. It's tedious. It's the way that I started doing nutrigenomic interpretations almost a decade ago, and it is taxing. And for the consumer, I've had people call me and say, I just gave up. I can't do that. What am I even looking at? This looks like computer code. So it's tough.
You say it. And the cells before I'm like, woo, my mind, where is it going?
yeah, I mean, I'll send you a picture of my oldest report and kind of what it looks like. But most people will just send me like a confused face, like, what am I doing here? And then there are some companies now that offer really neat software to interpret that raw data. For me, that information is great. It's just pretty useless unless you have someone or something to tell you what to do with it. So the interpretation, I think, is the most valuable thing you could have with that data. The second reason is they pulled a lot of really relevant information. To my knowledge, I could be wrong, so someone correct me if I'm incorrect on this one. But I believe they pulled out all of the genetics that are most common from the Human Genome Project around mental health. So a lot of like our neurotransmitter SNPs, our GAD1, our tryptophan, so serotonin precursors, and then like our DRD2, those would all be genes that I'd be really interested in looking at. And I don't think you have access to those, at least not through some of the third parties. And then also privacy. So so anybody can correct me on this if I'm wrong, but they have the ability to essentially give this data out to other third parties like pharmaceutical companies. And I understand that it is very likely it's anonymous, but it's still your data. So for me, I'm valuing privacy of my client. The testing that I use in my private practice is really just kept between me and my client, and that's it. And they can decide if we want to send that out to another doctor or, you know, anyone that it might be helpful to share that info with. But there were just a lot of hurdles to using some of these direct to consumer products. Yeah. I'm testing out two this year that are direct to consumer and kind of going through their protocol, their regimen, to see if this is something that would be really easy and consumer friendly. I would love to find one that I could just get behind 100%.
Yeah, I feel like that would ease the process for sure. You mentioned the mental health side of things, and I think that's super important and something that people would be very interested in. What, tell me a little bit about that, like a little bit more in depth about the mental side of the nutrigenomics.
Yeah, so this is something people want to talk about all the time. And I always preface this by saying I am not a licensed medical practitioner. I do not offer medical information, the whole nine yards. I like to offer a lot of education around why this information could be relevant for somebody that's frustrated and not getting help from maybe the traditional routes that have been introduced to them. So, you know, what I think anytime we're dealing with an illness that's difficult to show your doctor, maybe there's not physical signs, you know how you feel and you wake up in the morning and you know, this is not me. I don't feel like myself. I shouldn't be feeling this way and I don't know how to get out of it. It can be really difficult to articulate. And so one, nutrigenomics, I think, provides validity to those feelings. If you can take a report in and say, hey, maybe I need to be retested because I have these GAD markers, and we know that GAD1 is responsible for glutamate and GABA balance. So somebody that's feeling super overstimulated makes a lot of sense when we see these GAD markers. Same thing with tryptophan, our serotonin precursors. It also, you know, I want to be careful saying this because I think this might be a little bit up for debate depending on what specialty your doctor comes from. If they are a psychotherapist, they might have a different opinion about this, but we do know that there is a role in genetics and how well you metabolize certain medications. So if you are somebody who's maybe been on an SSRI to increase mood and it's not worked well for you, nutrigenomics can certainly tell us why and maybe point us in the right direction as to how to support some other areas like gut function that would then in turn support serotonin. We also can look at genes responsible for anxiety, like COMT is a really popular one. I think Dr. Ben Lynch has an entire chapter on his book in this on this particular gene. So finding a place to start untangling the mess is probably the best way I could answer that. Having something tangible to show a doctor when you're dealing with essentially an invisible illness, I think is really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people find themselves in that, I don't know what to do. I've tried so many different things. Nothing's really helping. And I think that's where nutrigenomics can come in and be able to bridge that gap between, like, here's actually visible data on, you know, what's going on, or where we take steps towards, educated steps towards fixing the problem, going to right. The problem.
Yeah. It's been really, it's really fun. Sometime when you're ready, we will run your genetics.
Yeah, I'm actually very interested now, and I definitely want to, you know, dig deeper into it. Where, if anyone's listening to this point, thank you all so much for hanging on with us. It's been definitely extremely educating. So where could they reach out to you if they're interested to learn more about your service, what you do, where to find you or follow you?
Sure. I'm not probably as active on social media as I should be, but my website is habitmethodhealth.com. And my Instagram is the same, at habitmethodhealth. And both of those two places have options for you to connect with me and links to schedule a free consultation. If you just want to, you know, call me and chat and tell me what's going on, I can certainly let somebody know if I'm the right match for them. And then, you know, decide if that's a route worth pursuing.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm interested. I definitely think that it's something that's not only on the forefront, but it's going to continue to get bigger in the future as far as customization for personal health when it comes to all of those aspects. And I think that's what genetic testing does. You know, it gives you your coding per se and allows you to, you know, take that information and be able to build educated steps towards, you know, feeling your best, living your best. And I think those two go hand in hand. When you feel good, you technically are going to be able to do more, live more, laugh more, do the things that you like. So, all right, last thing real quick. I saw that you, are you a golfer? Do you golf a little bit? No.
Not at all.
No golf?
I'm kind of like sports impaired. You do not want me on your team.
Okay, but I saw this though. What is the impact of and spinal mobility? I'm interested in too, because I think that is that something that you're pretty interested in. How does spinal mobility work with some of these, you know, sports related activities when it comes to, I think a lot of people deal with back pain. I think that's something that I get asked a lot about. Like, my back hurts all the time. Like, how do I deal with this stuff? So spinal mobility, how does that come into play when it comes to feeling your best when it comes to physical activity?
So if we think about the spine being sort of like the headquarters for movement and how our shoulders, our head, and our pelvis are connected in all these places, and the spine is sort of dictating these movements, you can imagine how a repetitive motion like swinging a golf club or a tennis racket, eventually your body would say, oh, okay, you want to do that? Well, sure, let's just hang out like this all day long. We're just going to be in this tilt all day long because that's what you're training me to do. So when I'm interested in helping my golfer gain rotation, one thing I do is work the other side. The newbie's great for encouraging some of these patterns, these compensation patterns that we develop in our life. And one thing that I think is really interesting, we were talking a little bit about head position, is how our brain perceives motion and position of things around us. So this is something that I think NewFit does an excellent job of emphasizing. But when our head is sort of in this like forward posture all the time, the way that our body moves to compensate that is directly affected. So if I have a golfer that is spending a lot of their time like this, the rest of their body is going to follow suit and like all the way down sort of accommodate that. So I will go to the driving range with you, but please don't ever make me hit a golf ball in front of you. It's really embarrassing. I'm terrible. But I think you're asking me that because there is a picture on my Instagram of me next to a golf cart because I was writing an article about that. But that's as far as my golf career goes.
No novice sports, like no pickup basketball, nothing?
No way. Even pickleball, I think I'd be really embarrassing. So I just walk my dog. That's kind of, I do a little yoga, walk my dog. I like to get my heart rate up. I love Odilla. I think that's great. I came from a background in dance, so anything that combines like compound movements is really fun for me. But no sports. I'm terrible.
I'm really interested. I want to start, and this is one of those things that I've been saying that I actually need to just do. But, you know, I always have had an interest and have seen the benefits of yoga and I think functional movement and even yoga as a meditation per se. But tell me a little bit more about Odilla because I kind of am interested.
Well, I'm such a newbie. I hope that I can get this right. But one of the coolest things and the way that it was explained to me that got me really interested is I'm somebody that is kind of hypermobile. So like my elbows hyperextend, my knees hyperextend, my lower back is always a little wonky. And for me, I just kept doing, I love yoga. I love restorative yoga. But the more that I would push into flexibility and try to achieve these poses, but kind of the less stable I got in my functional movement. And so Aldoa is kind of like yoga for your joints. Instead of just elongating muscles, and we're creating more stability around joints. So a lot of people think that that means like you can't move your joints as much, kind of the opposite. We're creating joints that can move and fall and like ski downhill without risk, as opposed to super floppy, hypermobile supporting tissues.
I think that's important. I think it's
really important
for someone
definitely
to ACL tears. Yeah. Go ahead.
They pair nicely together. So it doesn't have to be a one or the other, but what were you gonna say? Your doctor said what?
When I went to my doctor, he was like, let me see your, after I tore my knees, like, let me see your fingers. Like, this is not the problem. And he pulled my finger and he could see like the joint just, you know, like I have, like some, I think some people just have more flexibility in their joints to begin with. I think it can be a positive and a negative. This depends on how you're using it. Now I'm happy that I can, you know, be flexible. I think it's important, especially for someone lifting weights and trying to have just overall quality of life and health and, you know, functional movement. But joint stability is such an important thing. And just like you said, that posterior chain and being able to have a balance in your body is extremely important, I think.
Yeah. It's been so neat to see people who, like big bodybuilder guys kind of go through some of these movements. You know, these are bros that can lift, you know, 500 plus pounds or something. And then I put them in a position and ask them, just lift your arms, just lift your own arm, no weight. And they're just like, whoa. So it's pretty, it's been pretty neat to kind of see these transitions. And I really love to guinea pig things on myself first before I try them with clients. Kind of know what I'm getting into. And that was one thing that I was introduced to about a year ago. And it is just one of the coolest modalities. I think it might actually be called, there might be a different acronym for it in the UK. I need to find out. I just know it as LDOA, and it stands for something, but it was a French osteopath that that started this modality.
Yeah, it's definitely something I'm interested in. I'm gonna have to check it out. I'll get back to you on.
Yeah, keep me posted.
Doing it, but get out of your comfort zone. I mean, it's something that I think is where growth's found in whatever kind of avenue that, you know, you're going into, and anything in life and health and business. Getting out of your comfort zone is where that is found. So that's something that I'm constantly trying to do. And LDOA it is.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. People love to do the things they're already really good at, not always the things they should be doing. So I think that's a really positive encouragement when you're starting something new. It's like, you don't have to be great at this right away. It's kind of fun to not be good at it for a minute.
Right. It is. There is that weird kind of joy that you get when you are struggling through certain things like that. You can pertain it to the bodybuilding, you know, bodybuilding or working out, you're breaking down the muscles for it to be able to build back stronger, right? And when you're failing, it's virtually the same thing. I think that's important to look at life that way. You know, be able to tweak your mind to find joy in the discomfort, to be able to give yourself like those little serotonin dopamine hits when you are doing the hard things, like giving yourself those little bit of joy in the pain, right? And then not so much focused on down the road, but being able to be present in the moment. I think that's something that yoga or, you know, biohacking, I think for cold showers, it's something for me. It's doing an activity where you're in the moment, like there is nothing else going on around you and you're able to be present. And I think that's something that's even harder today. We're constantly,
definitely,
attention's constantly being begged for. There's so much stimulus being pushed at us when in reality, our minds aren't meant to handle all that stuff. So I think a lot of this anxiety, yeah, depression and ADHD from our food and from the things that we do, but also from overloading like all this stimulation that isn't really how we're wired.
One of the hardest challenges ever given to me was a coach that that I work with a couple times a year and specializes in functional mobility. And he told me, I want you to do this workout we had been practicing, but I want you to do it in a room with no music in your workout and no lights on. And I want you to do it barefoot. And it was so incredibly challenging. I'm a little bit like a hummingbird brain. I'm always kind of doing like four or five things at once. I'm so grateful it doesn't impair my sleep, but I'm sure it's not good for my body to sort of feel like we're always on, I'm always going. And so it was really interesting to see like how much more I noticed movement when I didn't have all of these like other sensory things going on around me. And I'm not somebody who can meditate easily. I'm always just like thinking of whatever I need to be doing next. So it was really hard, but I think it's a really fun challenge, and it's easy to do. I mean, if you are working at it, help me certainly just turn music off and lights off and go through your routine, notice what you're feeling in your breathing and things.
I like that. I like that a lot. It is kind of, I can't remember who it was I heard say it, but it was like, if you're listening to music while you're working out, like you're cheating, which I listen to every time I work out, but I totally understand that. Like it's, I get in my own little world and, you know, it's almost like my own little party in there, but.
I don't know if there's any merit to these, but I've been spending a lot more time listening to some of those self-physio frequencies. I don't know if they're helpful, but they certainly are relaxing. So I figure they can't be hurting me, but I know the science is sort of still out. I'd love to hear somebody that specializes in that, but.
Binaural beats or?
Kind of like binaural beats, but if I understand the difference, binaural beats are working on each side of our brain and using one ear. But solfeggio frequencies have like actual healing frequencies. So certain tones are healing. I don't know, but I'd love someone to tell me if that's true.
Therapist on early on, I mean, within the first 20 episodes, and she was pretty adamant about sound frequencies and auditory healing, that some of those sounds and like Tibetan bowls and stuff like that.
Right.
I think it's very interesting. Like I said, health is not a one size fits all approach, but there are definitely alternatives out there to problems that have been covered up by, you know, blanket statements that a lot of people believe because that's what they've been told.
There, I mean, I'm so glad that we were at least able to touch on just the tip of the iceberg for wellness, but I mean, so much more to unravel. I could talk about this for days. It is my favorite thing to talk about, and to really see these changes in people is really exciting, especially when they were sort of feeling like nobody was hearing them or understanding them. And when you tell them, hey, you can just make these little bitty changes, I think even, you know, like you were saying, like integrating these sounds in your day instead of on your commute listening to like heavy metal and getting pumped up, you know, turn on something that tells your body it's okay, you can relax, you can let go. What, I mean, we know this even is true for something as simple as weight loss. It doesn't have to be a medical mystery that your body cannot release stored fat when it's under stress. So whatever your goal is, you know, whether it's building muscle or sleeping better, or your hormone health, all of these things require the body to be like at closer to homeostasis and really kind of saying, okay, I got this. I know what to do here.
Yeah. I think that's extremely important to note. And it's just a good overlying message on what we're trying to, you know, hit home here, that you got to find something that's fits you. But what you do with nutrigenomics is being,
you got it,
to be aware of, you know, where you are and what you're doing and, you know, kind of how to attack that in your own way. So I think we've covered a lot. I think there's a lot to break down there. There's a full book of notes if you guys are taking notes. Ryan, thank you so much for coming on the show. And you can find Ryan at Habitat. That's something totally different. At Habitat on Instagram or on her website as well. So thank you, Ryan, so much for coming on. And I look forward to continuing this relationship down the road.
Thank you so much for having me. Such a pleasure to chat with you.
All right, y'all. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Breathe and Air podcast. I'm your host, Mason Bendigo, and we just had Ryan Overcash on. She's the owner of the Habit Method Health Company, and we talked about so many different things, and I just thank y'all for hanging in with us this long. There's a lot to digest. So speaking of gut health, that's not a pun. But if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, hit that purple subscribe button, leave a comment. Let me know what you thought about our episode today. If there's something that you have a question on, you can reach out to me and Ryan if you have any questions. And just thank you so much for listening to another episode.